The joys of Bryan Adams and Run to You. Here we are, Rolling One's Hours on a Sunday morning, outrageously so. Anyway, happy Sunday. In a few moments, we'll be speaking to Alan Stevens, who'll be updating us as far as Doctor Who is concerned, because he is a Doctor Who scholar extraordinaire. But in the studio, we have a fabulous individual called Rachel Teat. How are you, Rachel?
I'm very well, thank you.
Now, Rachel, it's highly likely that one or two of our listeners and podcast listeners and so on might have actually encountered you in all sorts of ways, from Hollyoaks through to other events, and so, because you are one of those wonderful creatures that actually the North Americans originally would say were the shamans, the people who actually take the sort of culture that we are in and manifest our dreams and our fears in voice. You're an actress.
I am indeed.
So share with us, what's the background? What's the Rachel Teat CV and life story there?
Oh, it's very exciting. Well, I guess my biggest sort of achievement was a series called Wolfblood, which was in partnership with ZDF, which is a German company. And that got sold to, I think, about 56 countries around the world. So I'm on the Disney International Channel, and I play a really brilliant character who's a school bully called Cara. Yeah, she's awful. She's so mean, but it was so much fun to play because she had the best lines. She was really kind of sassy and feisty, but she was also very bright.
And the topic of the series, was it werewolves perhaps, lycanthrope, or was it nothing
to
do with that?
You have to be very careful about the werewolf term.
Of course.
See, they're not werewolves, they're wolf bloods.
Exactly.
So they can turn into wolves, but they're not werewolves or scary creatures.
It's eminently sensible, you know, the whole thing, yeah. Any lycanthropes who were mildly offended by that, I apologise in reserve on behalf of Southside Broadcasting and more. And here we are in Middlesbrough, the bastion of civilisation in all sorts of ways, at the James Cook University Hospital. And your first experience, obviously, of Southside Broadcasting, you'll find out more about how it's gone and time machines is still to come. But you've been bitten by the radioactive radio bug, basically.
I have indeed, absolutely. And Tony the Tiger is behind me as well, saying you are great. So very much into the whole radio thing, and radio dramas, presenting, podcasting, all those sorts of things really interest me.
Positive thoughts all the way, including blatant product placement, of course, for the former Tony Tiger, who I gather is being slimmed down in the new sort of Kellogg's.
Is he? He's
just political
correctness. Too much sugar.
Exactly. Obesity crisis.
100 strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. One tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
That's the recipe.
If you
would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
Alright.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
Quite right too. Okay, it's time now to welcome back to the airwaves an awesome individual who, you must admit, we've been without for several weeks, partly because, again, so many things to be packed into shows. And if I actually said that Daley Thompson was the reason that we couldn't actually fit you in this week, Alan, I hope you don't mind that even though you are the Alan Stevens, you did lose out to an athlete who wanted to promote a new campaign that he's actually doing to make people think big.
Daley Thompson.
Yes. Athlete.
In the 70s.
Decathlete person, yeah. Double Olympic gold medal winner, so it's important for them. However, can I introduce you formally to the awesome Rachel Teat?
Good morning.
Hello.
And Rachel is an actress who was in the series called
Wolfblood.
Exactly.
What?
Wolfblood.
Wolfblood.
Wolfblood. Thank you.
It was about lycanthropes. Don't mention the W word, lycanthropes. And various other things. Sold to over 67 countries.
Yeah,
and still being viewed out there.
It is, yeah.
Exactly. And you have seen the first series, The Woman Who Fell to Earth, as a fellow Yorkshire actress. You can bond with the other Yorkshire actresses taking the role.
Absolutely. I think Jodie's brilliant.
There we are. That's the view of Rachel Teat, you see. But Alan, at the end of the day, we need to progress to your good self before we find out more about Rachel and have views with respect to who. How have you been finding the series? And was the Punjab episode even better than Rosa Parks? Was it simply a reworking? Did you find that the pregnant male was not really... Take it at your own time. Where do you want to go with us?
Right, well, there were two stories we've had so far since I last was there, and mm-hmm. the first one is got a title I'm having difficulty pronouncing.
Yes,
Tsuranga.
Yeah, Tsuranga. The Tsuranga conundrum.
Is it
Tsuranga conundrum?
I call it the Satsuma conundrum. Easier to say. Mm-hmm. It's actually a city, you know. It really is. Someone think he's daft, made up words. I said, well, actually, no. It actually is a city. So. There you go. But, yeah, what did I think of that one? Not much, really. It was written by Chris Chibnall. And the trouble is, you know, what I didn't like particularly about it was... It was kind of a traditional Chibnall story in that he throws a lot of elements into the 60 Minutes, which don't gel.
It was set on a spaceship. It was like 42, directed by our ace mutual colleague Graham Harper.
There were elements of 42 in it, yeah. There was also elements of the Ark in space, and also the, I'm not sure, remember it, you might remember it actually, the Twilight Zone episode, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, which involved William Shatner looking
and a gremlin.
Yeah, looking out of the wing of his plane and seeing his gremlin tearing off big chunks of metal.
And in the movie version, John Lithgow took on the same role. Not as the gremlin, but as the William Shatner character.
Yeah, I don't remember the... I did see the movie years ago, but I don't remember that very clearly. But I do remember the original one. Yeah, William Shatner's very good in that. In fact, William Shatner was in a number of episodes of that series. So you've got a gremlin appears on the Ark in space and starts tearing pieces up, and... They're all saying, oh my goodness, you know, we've got such and such minutes before we arrive at such and such place. And you know, it was really boring, actually. It was tedious.
Well, you say that, but at the same time, in its defence, I would say possibly that the notion of reversing the gender stereotypes and actually having a man giving birth, whilst you might say, oh, it's ticking boxes yet again. I mean, like the Rachel, I mean, you know, obviously there's a movie a few years ago with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I dealt with men giving birth. I mean, you've had that experience, you know. Do you sort of think, yeah, actually, it will be a better place if more men actually did give birth?
Oh, that would be joyous. I had 48 hours of labour, wow. So I would happily have passed that on to someone else.
Reminds me of a joke, actually, that a husband went in with his wife and said, there's a little device we have which, if you put on your wrist, you will feel the pain that your wife will feel. You know, it can be like a quarter, or you know, a third, or a full pain while she's giving birth. And he said, "Well, I like to share an experience." So he puts the device on, and the process starts, and he doesn't feel anything at all. And he says, "Well, perhaps I should just turn up a bit more." And he turns it up a bit more, and still nothing happens. And he turns up full spot. You know, so the father would feel the pain and nothing. And at the end of the birth, he says, "Well, I didn't feel anything at all." And then they go home and they find the milkman dead.
Yeah. Okay. sometimes the darkness of Alan Stevens. Where are we going on this one?
But I think all this thing about box ticking and stuff, is not true. I think that there's this idea within a particular segment of the Doctor Who community that it's to do with political correctness, and they therefore try and retrofit everything to this this belief, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, how is it politically correct for a man to give birth? I mean, men can't give birth, can they? It's hardly saying, you know, people aren't queuing up to be, you know, impregnated with embryos. And, you know, I mean, Red Dwarf back in 1980s. I mean, Lister became pregnant and gave birth to two children. Remember that? Mm. I mean, it's an ongoing, long... I mean, Alien was basically about, you know, impregnating itself into...
anybody, quite literally.
yes.
Androids, human beings, yeah. The whole thing.
So apparently Alien 1979, that's political correctness gone mad, obviously.
Yeah.
So this is a ridiculous, ridiculous argument, not saying you're ridiculous, but I just, you know, it's an argument that's going around, which I just think is daft. And, I have no problem with Doctor being female. I didn't think the guy giving birth scene was particularly, I wouldn't have put it in myself, because basically I didn't think the actor was very good, and I don't think it had any real function beyond the fact that it gave two of the cast members something to do, and that is the problem.
Well, yeah, these days actors need all the work they can get.
Sorry, say again.
Actors need all the work they can get, so clearly...
Yeah, well, I'm pretty less bad actors. I mean, there was you've got a cast of four, and I haven't got any problem with the cast either. I mean, I like them all. I think they're all good. But the trouble is, it's too many regulars for a you know, was it 60-minute episode? I mean, back in the 1960s, the reason you had a cast of four is because basically it was filmed as live. It didn't go out as live, but it was filmed as live. So you'd have Ian and Barbara talking on the set, and then they would cut to the Doctor and Susan talking. And while they were doing that, Ian and Barbara was legging it to the next set, and the next scene was being set up. It was done as live. As the show went on and editing improved or became less expensive, the cast was then reduced down to three. And the reason for that was because it was a year-long show, members of the cast would have holidays, so the Doctor wouldn't be in some episodes. You'd have to have someone to talk to. And then finally, when the show was reduced down to 26 episodes a year, the Doctor was in every episode, and the cast came down to the Doctor and his companion. So when they came back in the 1980s and brought back four again, you had stories where, you know, Nyssa suddenly faints and spends entire TARDIS time in the TARDIS, you know, unconscious, because they just didn't have anything for her to do. And that's what you've got. You're back to that situation again. You don't have. You've got a. You know, they're good, but they aren't. I mean, the black guy hasn't got hardly gets anything to do at all. He's got some illness which I can't pronounce and can't remember what it was all about. Which we saw apparently, and he is unable to ride bikes or climb ladders or something.
Dyspraxia is what you're looking for. Dyspraxia.
Yeah, that's right. But it's hardly ever used or mentioned, and it's really something that, you know, we can sort of bond over. I don't mind the actor. I think I like him, actually. I think he's very good. But I don't think, you know, you need a cast of four regulars in a show that's only, you know, with 60-minute episodes. It's,
Let's progress, Alan. In terms of the Taranga conundrum, I'm suspecting that Rachel is not getting a vibe that you're recommending she goes and sees it as another episode of Jodie Whittaker. I mean, I think that's fair, Rachel.
Yeah, I think I won't be watching it.
No.
Perhaps.
A Taranga conundrum. Yeah. Thank you for pronouncing it right, because I just couldn't really. A Satsuma conundrum, I'd say, was the worst story of this season, and possibly one of the worst stories I've seen since...
Robot of Sherwood?
No, it's far worse stories since then.
Oh, dear.
What about that one with the Land of... Lie of the Land? Remember that one with the city pyramids turning up and what?
Ah, yes.
That was terrible, wasn't it? Also, there was the Christmas one as well, wasn't it? It was the Twice Upon a Time, where William Hartnell was apparently... or the First Doctor was apparently turned into some sort of misogynist...
non-PC individual.
Well, he was... The Doctor, the original Doctor, wasn't like that at all.
No, he exactly.
He was
curmudgeonly, but not non-PC.
He wasn't sexist. He never ever said... I mean, the first Doctor to go and say, go and make a cup of coffee was Patrick Troughton.
There we are.
Yeah.
Chipotle, effectively, played by Annika Wills. But there we are. Annika, who's actually sat in the very same chair that you've sat in today, actually.
Uh-huh.
So there we are. Just
fabulous.
Small world.
So the tango conundrum, I thought, was...
The tango, gosh.
Yeah, I'm changing all the time, aren't I?
I like it. It's like very strictly tied.
Exactly.
It was boring. It didn't really say anything. It didn't gel. It was hugely derivative, basically. And the dialogue was not very good either. So it was... And it looked kind of cheap as well. The sets were nice, but, you know, some of the effects were...
I'm suspecting maybe it's a 3 out of 10 for you, then.
I don't know. I'd say minus 3.
Good heavens.
Minus 3! Oh, goodness me. Oh, ouch. The Daleks will be after you.
No, the Daleks hate it. I was yesterday. I've got a Dalek here, actually.
He has, quite literally. He used it as his Facebook avatar as well. It's amazing.
Gosh.
It's astounding. however, moving dexterously on from that point of view, and we'll draw veil over a Taranga conundrum, which...
yeah. You got it wrong now.
I know. Let's move on to the next episode, which was another historical. It looks as though historicals are very much in vogue. Every other story seems to be a historical.
Yeah.
And what did you make of the partition of the Punjab, demons of the Punjab, of course?
Right, well, we'll cover the bad bits first. The bad bits was the opening reason as to why they went back.
She wanted to find out what her grandmother actually was like as a child.
I know, but you've got a situation when the grandmother gives them, here's a broken watch. Okay, why did you give me a broken watch? Well, I won't bother explaining it to you. Okay, well, I'll nip back in time and find out then. I mean, it's a bit contrived, I'm afraid.
Sounds like everyday life in the Teach family.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, the passive-aggressive grandmother gives them a series of presents which she doesn't explain. And so they goes back in time to discover why, where this watch came from. Some of the dialogue was incredibly cliché. Chris Boucher, who I knew very well, worked with him. He said, when you write a script, write it and then go back and cross out, everything, you know, which is, cliché, all the clichés, and try and write something else. And I don't think this writer did go back and write, cross out all the clichés, were there, so it was a bit, oh god, it was like reading the Daily Mail. And the second thing, well, obviously...
Now, is that Daily Mail when Paul Dacre was editor, or Geordie Gregg?
I think the new guy, actually, because Dacre was a bit of a...
Fair enough.
There has been a shift in the Daily Mail, isn't there?
A big shift, exactly.
And so, Express.
Suddenly, we're all Europe, you know, it's all pro-Europe. Oh, where'd that come from, then? Amazing.
Well, it's not quite pro-Europe, it's sort of pro-May's idea that we're going to get this brilliant package which everyone hates. I don't know. It's just crazy, isn't it, really? I've given up on... What's going to happen then?
Yeah. Well, you know, you and Esther McVeigh, let's face it, Alan. You know, it's just a case of just leave it, you know? Leave it out.
Just walk away from it.
I mean, Dominic Raab, on the other hand, bearing in mind that he's... Exactly. Really tiny shoes to actually sort of step into for people who are actually there. I suppose on the basis that he didn't actually understand that there was actually an important trade link between Calais and Dover, and Dover and Calais.
A bit worrying, isn't it?
Maybe the bar isn't that high for intellectual capabilities to actually step into the role. I mean, Rachel, you might like to take over as well.
Yeah, I've got size 3 feet as well, so I'd fit in perfectly.
There you go.
Did you see that William Shatner, you know, the Captain Admiral Kirk piece I put up, you know, him shedding Khan?
I knew you were referencing that, and it was for the Alan Stevens Facebook fans there that I thought I'd let it in and not refer to the whole thing.
Go wait for you to press like on it.
But back to the good points of Doctor Who of this episode. Tell us more, because I'm intrigued.
Sorry, what?
Back to the good points of the episode.
Okay, the bad bits were the opening reasons to go back in time. A lot of the dialogue wasn't great. There's a lot of info dumping as well, which unfortunately, I mean, I think Jodie...
Don't you just hate it when you got info dump? Did you have much info dump in Wolf's Blood?
Definitely not.
No. Yeah.
But we also had 12 regulars, so Alan wouldn't have been happy.
Whoa.
I think, but you haven't got just four regulars, you've got four regulars, and then you've got the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If it was just four regulars turning up, you know, in a spaceship, well, okay, and they spent most of the time just walking around talking to one another, that would work, actually, but... You've got new characters sort of... Yeah, well, anyway. What was this talking about? Punjab thing, wasn't it? Yeah. What was I saying? I was saying I didn't like the dialogue, I didn't like the opening scene, and I thought, oh, yeah. And some of the acting was a bit off, wasn't it? I thought some of the acting was a bit sort of like not very good. I think the grandmother herself wasn't great, and then when she appeared again, you know, as a young woman, she still wasn't great. So I suppose there was a sort of continuity of bad acting there.
Runs in the family.
Brilliant.
Yeah. But... music was excellent. Incidental music for this season has been excellent and a great It's good to get away from Murray Smith, who had a tendency sometimes to be...
Gold,
you know,
Murray Gold.
Murray Gold, yeah, yes, the memorable Murray Gold.
Exactly.
And it seems like sometimes he was headbutting the keyboard towards the end of the thing. But
it's a form of creativity, you know.
Yeah.
Many composers have actually done that and signed up with all sorts of possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely right. And he certainly got, I mean, he is a Doctor Who, 15 years of Doctor Who, like. Mm. So, I thought the incident was good. I thought it was very well filmed. I thought there was a good twist for the aliens, and
they weren't really bad aliens at all. They were
observers.
Misunderstood.
Yes,
we all thought the beans. Well, we all thought that the demons of the Punjab were the aliens. And then suddenly it turned out it wasn't. Was it? It was actually
the demons were us, human beings.
The demons were us,
other humans.
So I thought it was, it had an emotional kick. You know, I felt my bottom lip wobbling at the end. So. You know, on that score, it did very well. So, no, I don't think it was a rehash or anything, you know, much like the Rosa Parks one.
Mm-hmm.
Bar the fact it was an historical and had black people in. Oh, no! But I thought it was pretty good. So, yeah, I think that was a good one. And also, the huge bonus was it wasn't actually written by Chris Chibnall. But I'm sure he was in there destroying the dialogue somewhere.
Oh, come now. As showrunner, he's doing his best. I mean, anyway, the good thing is there's now another Blackpool Madame Tussauds Doctor Who exhibition, and there's going to be another Cardiff Doctor Who exhibition. So, close to your good self at the Forest of Dean, Alan. So, and it's going to be on New Year's Day as opposed to Christmas Day for the Christmas/New Year special. So, you know, what's not to love?
They had a Cardiff thing, and then they closed it down, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Now they're reopening it again.
And forever?
Who knows? Forever is a long, long time, and we're dealing with Time Lords and time.
Cardiff counts aren't too bright, really. They decided they were going to use it for something else, weren't they? And then they suddenly, at last minute, said, oh, no, hang on, you can stay, and the BBC said, I'm sorry, we're already going, and then they've come back in. Yeah, it is all... A bit of a mess.
It's like a rubber ball, a kind of bungee jumping exhibition. Still, think of the extras that get some added work out of actually being monsters there. So
of course, Doctor Who actually isn't made in Cardiff anymore, is it? It's
no.
Made in Manchester and Sheffield, is it?
Yeah, well, yeah, location, South Africa, of course, and other parts of the globe.
They should put the Doctor Who exhibition up there, shouldn't they? Up north there.
Middlesbrough.
They should film it in Middlesbrough.
We actually did have a Doctor Who exhibition before you were born, Rachel. It was in the Town Hall Crypt, and it was where I first saw Daleks in real life and the TARDIS, and the BBC had a full exhibition that they toured around certain parts of the country, and Middlesbrough was blessed in the 1970s to host that exhibition.
How exciting!
Yeah, well.
Are you sure?
Yeah, absolutely, Alan. I was there. Please, I don't have
to.
Are you
sure it wasn't the 80s?
No.
In America?
No. Definitely not. It was, because the earliest they'd actually gone up to was the Talons of Weng Chiang in terms of the Doctor Who material, and it was all set in the Town Hall Crypt. So it was very atmospheric, because obviously you had the Victorian Gothic architecture of Middlesbrough Town Hall, which is obviously being redone as we speak.
It is.
And you had the Doctor Who BBC exhibition in as well from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went to the Doctor Who exhibition in Blackpool in 1978, and also there was the Space 1999 exhibition as well.
Oh, yes, that was also in Blackpool. Space 1999 never got to Middlesbrough.
Oh.
Closest we had was the Apollo astronauts in 1971.
Did they do a tour?
We got a tour of the Moon Rock and models of the actual systems that landed there, but no astronauts, as far as I'm aware, were spotted in Middlesbrough because we're full of aliens already. Alan, it's been awesome, as we knew it would be, and we feel as though... What mark out of 10 would you actually go for Demons of Punjab, by the way?
Probably 8, I suppose. The interesting thing is, concerning ratings... There was an article.
Biggest ever. Biggest ever.
Was it?
Yeah. According to Doctor Who Monthly, which might be slightly biased.
What?
These ratings are shaping up to be the hugest ratings ever for any Doctor Who series.
Well, I don't buy Doctor Who magazine anymore, so I can't comment on that one. The ratings at the moment, if we're talking about, you know, the average, and we don't know yet, because we've still got another 4 episodes to go, so the next episode could have, like, 4 people watch it. You know,
unlikely, though. Unlikely.
No, it's unlikely. Unlikely.
Particularly after you've built up Chris Chilman once again on this podcast.
Well, it's an awkward one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, you know, he's obviously doing something right, because the average ratings per episode, this series, so for 6 episodes, is 8.2 million.
Mm.
And that is the biggest... season overall rating figure since 1982.
Exactly.
So that's Peter going back Davison. Some years.
Oh, I love Peter Davison.
Who doesn't?
He's a fabulous man.
I was almost tempted to say, I love you, Peter, when he sort of spoke to me a few years ago, but I didn't.
You should have done.
I held back. I thought it's too much, you know, too much. David J. Howe and was present, so was Sam Stone. I thought, we're friends here, so that's this easy.
Be cool.
Exactly.
Peter Davison's first season in 1982 got an average of, I think it was 9.1 million.
Wow.
Though his following season, his following two seasons, and he got 7.5, so I don't know what happened there.
And even more people can secure the wonderfulness of Peter Davison with the recently released Blu-ray editions of one of Peter Davison's seasons as well.
His third season, 19, which got 9 million.
So
it's you know, everyone was saying it was going to be awful, and the idea they had a female doctor was going to be terrible, and people were going to watch.
Well, you say everyone. I wasn't saying it.
I wasn't saying it either.
A lot of people kept saying it. And they're wrong.
Where are they now, exactly?
They're probably waiting for a Chris Chibnall episode to have a go at it again, aren't they? I mean, I don't know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, the trouble with Doctor Who is that, the fact about Doctor Who is that it changes. You know, you couldn't take a Hartnell episode and put next to a Tom Baker episode because it's so radically different. If you look at Star Trek, so the original series, you've had three seasons, and basically you could put that in any order and it would still make sense. You can't do that with Doctor Who. It's a problem. It changes enormously. And so there's people who, you know, when they were growing up, were Pertwee fans or Baker fans or Peter Davison fans, and these are distinct eras, and they often like it, you know, when it's nearer to what they want. But you can't drag the show back to 1972 or whatever. It just didn't work. It would be like
an episode of Black Mirror.
Homer Simpson building that car. Remember?
Exactly. So, an episode of Black Mirror.
I think it should be done.
I don't see that anymore because they've shifted, haven't they? Moved it to, was it Netflix or something?
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I can't watch it now
because Netflix run the world, Alan.
They do.
We won't be getting Netflix after the break, is it? When Britain, you know, crowbars itself and floats off into the Atlantic.
I've heard all sorts of things, but you know, where there are territories to be exploited, I'm sure that our digital providers will still find some.
I completely agree with you.
Exactly.
I suppose you can get it on DVD, can you?
Well,
if you have a DVD player,
old school, yeah, wonderful, yeah. And why not? Well, I still have video players as well.
People don't do DVDs now.
I do. I love my DVD player.
Thank you, Rachel. Well done.
I think most people still got DVDs now. I've still got VHS.
There you are. So, marks out of 10.
I've still got a wax cylinder. What?
Marks out of 10 for Demons of the Punjab.
Yes, already.
Eight. He said eight.
Eight. Oh, yeah. That's it. Alan, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
It's just not there anymore. Sorry?
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us?
That was fast. Yeah, it was good.
I think you'll be back in a fortnight or so when you'll be reflecting on...
A fortnight again, are we?
James the First.
Ooh. No? Yeah. Is that tonight?
James the First tonight is the
Kablam.
Kablam, exactly. Oh. As in Children in Need and all sorts of other bits and pieces.
Really? What?
If you want it, Kablam.
Oh, they should have clipped, didn't they?
They did.
Kablam it.
Yeah, did you see that Children in Need little girl on there saying that she was sort of like bonding with Doctor Who or whatever?
Yes. So,
yeah. And then afterwards,
James the First.
There's the Witchfinders.
James the First with Alan Cumming as James the First.
Oh, really? That sounds good.
Worth seeing it by your second episode, I would have said.
Yeah.
And then last two episodes are...
Wolverine plays James the First.
What?
Oh, sorry, Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler plays James the First.
I don't know what you're talking about now.
Alan Cumming played Nightcrawler in the X-Men series.
Oh, I didn't watch that. Superhero stuff.
Fair enough.
Takes You Away is episode 9. And the last episode is The Battle of... Oh,
Christ. I knew you wouldn't pronounce it, so let's I'll leave you with the pronunciation exercises for the last thing. Exactly.
Just say Tangerine again.
Exactly. The Battle of Tangerine. That's the line forward.
Okay, Battle of Tangerine.
Marvellous.
And then there's the New Year's Day episode, isn't there?
Exactly.
Which isn't on Christmas anymore.
No, that's because it's New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Alan, thank you for your time. We'll speak again very soon. Keep on keeping on. Did you enjoy chatting to Rachel?
Yes, it was very nice.
It's lovely to chat to you too, Alan.
Thank you, Rachel.
You will have that in common forevermore now, Rachel.
We are bonded.
Exactly.
We have.
Across the airwaves.
Exactly. from the joys of Wolf's Blood through all sorts of Hollyoaks as well and a whole stack of other
things. Tangerine Conundrum.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But Alan, if you want to actually have an ace voiceover artist when you next want to develop the next series of audio delights from Big Finish, from Caldor City Productions and Magic Bullet Productions.
God, I think it was.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll set the next one up north.
Yeah.
Do it. Why not? Set it in Middlesbrough, in the crypt.
There you have it, you see.
You're not from Middlesbrough.
I am from Middlesbrough.
Alex is Nottingham, isn't it?
No, I've never been from Nottingham.
Have you?
I've always been Middlesbrough. We've both been Middlesbrough people.
Perhaps I'm thinking of what's that guy? I'm from Nottingham. Remember?
Yes.
Soul of the Century.
That was actually not Nottingham. That was Nicholas Parsons, and he was from Norwich.
Norwich, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah.
Alan Partridge.
I thought we were going down the Alan Partridge route then.
I don't think we really do much Alan Partridge.
No.
Aha. Uh-huh. We'll speak again soon, Alan. Happy trails in the Forest of Dean.
Hey?
Happy trails in the Forest of Dean.
Okay.
Good.
I did my best to notice when the call came down the line. Up to the platform of surrender, I was brought but I was kind. And sometimes I get nervous when I see an open door. Close your eyes, clear your heart. Cut the cord, are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital. My hands are cold. And I'm on my knees looking for the answer. Are we human? Or are we dancer?
Brandon Flowers, lead singer, of course, of The Killers. That's his question.
Or are we dancers?
Rhetorically speaking, of course.
Are we human? Or are we dancers?
Could be a Strictly reference, of course. We forgot to ask Alan what he thought of the Cybermen in Strictly.
Kevin was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love Kevin from Grimsby. Right. And last night in Blackpool, he was epic.
I can see, Rachel, you've clearly sort of taken this strictly notion to your heart. Is it because, I'm surprised you haven't been called upon yourself?
Well,
to take
that
part.
Would be the dream.
Right.
But okay. I absolutely love it. And I always catch the end of Doctor Who as I'm waiting for the results show.
There you are. See what's coming up next. It's amazing there. So there we are. It's the joys of Strictly. Are we human? Are we dancer? Who knows? I couldn't really do the tango to it. Oh, maybe they could. Who never knows what Craig Revel Horde would come up with these days.
Fabulous.
Probably. Never been the same since Len left, though, somehow.
It hasn't, but I do like Shirley. I think she's really fair.
Yeah.
There's lots of tens last night, though.
Exactly. Oh, well, it's better than ever, really. I heard a rumour that for the Christmas special, Anne Widdecombe's coming back.
She is.
Good heavens.
Yes. That's going to be most entertaining.
Makes the license fee just so much more worthwhile.
Doesn't
if you're listening to Southside Broadcasting, you don't have to worry about the license fee. It's completely free of charge. But other things you might like to check out, the recent Flow Me to the Moon podcasts, Book of the Month, and indeed our coverage of the Discover Middlesbrough Festival. They're all there and easily accessible. Great music continues all the day as far as Southside's concerned. You can reach us via two routes, our email, if you wish, info@southsideradio.com, or just call us on 01642 854742, or use Facebook.com/Southside Broadcasting, or if you really fancy being bold, go to Twitter.com/Southside Broad C. Rachel, have you enjoyed your debut on the production today?
I have loved it. Thank you very much for having me.
This little mini Sunday special we've put together, and we wrap up with Jason Derulo, who is being featured in this little mix number, which I know, Rachel, you're going to introduce. So off you go, please.
Here is Secret Love Song by the wonderful Little Mix.
When you hold me in the street and you kiss me on the dance floor, I wish that it could be like that. Why can't it be like that? 'Cause I'm yours. We keep behind closed doors. Every time I see you, I die a little more. Stolen moments that we steal as the curtain falls. It'll never be enough. It's obvious you're meant for me. Every piece of you, it just fits perfectly. Every second, every thought, I'm in so deep. But I'll never show it on my face. But we know this. We got a love that is homeless. Why can't you hold? You do when you're with me, does it feel the same? Would you leave if I was ready to settle down? Now what you play is safe and stay. Girl, you know this. We got a love that is hopeless. Why can't you? Can I kiss you on the dance floor? I wish that we could be like that. Why can't we be like that? 'Cause I'm yours.